I want to take this opportunity to welcome everybody. We know that by this time of the year, all of us, we are now tired. When you wake up in the morning, it's so difficult. It tells you it has been a very hectic year. But today's meeting is about receiving your reports, the annual report and the financial statements. And we would like to assure you that you have our support in your day-to-day activities. And with these few words, I welcome you. Before we can begin with our program, I would like to request the secretary to do the apologies, and from there we'll do the introduction. Over to you, secretary.
Thank you, Chairperson. The apologies will be received to Mr. Kwanko and Mr. King, they attend the Chief Whip's Forum. And then Mr. Murabela is no more a member of the committee. He has now joined the provincial legislature in Crusade. And we have to seek the replacement for him. Yeah. And that's the only part.
Those are the apologies. Can I request the person who is also new to introduce his crew, then we will do that there.
Good morning, Chairperson, and good morning, Honorable Member. My name is Lungile Mapeke. I am the Chairperson of Staff Corps, descended from August this year. With me is some of the members of the board. In fact, there's a letter of apology that was sent to the Chairperson for the purpose of indicating the absence of three members who could not make it for today because of other prior engagement. I will start from my immediate left. It's Dr. Kulane Mlokwane. She is a new member. In fact, all the non-executive members are new. Dr. Kulane Mlokwane, she's also a member of RENCO. And then Dr. Mashango, DG Specialist Mashango, is also a new member and is also a member of the Social and Ethics Committee. And then next to him is Mr. Rashidi, Mwarale Jacob Rashidi. He's also the chairperson of INCO and also a member of the Social and Ethics Committee. And then next to Mr. Rashidi is Miss Caroline Pumzile Ngwenya. She is also a member of the board, if you remember. And she is the chairperson of Social and Ethics Committee and also a member of Audit and Risk Management Committee. And the last one of the board members who are here is Mr. Gabriel Perron. He likes to be called Harvey. He's also a member of FinCo as well as Audit and Risk Management Committee. And then the other people behind, after Mr. Taron, as executive members, starting with Miss Julia Fafuni, who is executive human resource management and transformation. Left to her is Miss Zolifa Mashinini, who is the CFO. And the last one around the table is the CEO, Mrs. Nomki Tamon. At the back, the one who's standing up is Mr. Francis Digilas, who is the CEO of the company. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We now know who are the faces. Let me also do the same from our side. I will start with me. My name is Dipuo Lizasituba. I'm the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee of Public Enterprises. We are a committee of 10 members. As you have heard, others render their apologies and today we are only five. So that's from extreme right at the end.
I'm a member of this committee, permanent member of the committee.
You from which village?
I'm from Eastern Cape in Alwa North, that's where you find me. The last town when you reach, before you reach the thing, you cross the river, Orange River, and then you get off the thing.
My name is Jeline Obanda, born in Namakwa, Eastern Cape, comes from North West Province.
What is
the officials of the committee will also introduce themselves.
Morning, my name is Lord Nimnisi. I'm a content advisor to the committee.
Hi, morning. I'm Dee Bramwell. I'm the committee researcher.
Good morning, my name is Isabu Mchumi and I'm the committee secretary.
Thank you very much. Our agenda says we now go to the briefing by subcon. Chairperson, I hand over to you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We are very pleased, Madam Chair, to give an opportunity to present the integrated report of 2014-2015. The report that is being presented today not only reflects the performance of SACO as against the key performance indicators set by the shoulder compact, but also reflects tangible actions that responded to the three entity priorities: raising employment through faster economic growth, improving the quality of education, skills development and innovation, building the capacity of the state to play a developmental transformative role. As we go through the report, you would see that those are key drivers. This does not necessarily mean that we have not encountered challenges, but in that process, we have been in a position to reflect or to say we have contributed in the reduction of inequality, poverty and unemployment. On the issues of inequality, you would note particularly when the report on employment, the statistics of who is employed, who constitute the leadership in the circle, and what percentage do you find the role of women in circle. Those are part of that reflection. The skills development is not only focusing on skills development within SACO, but also skills development around the areas where SACO operates. Innovation, as you also note, that there are new things that are being proposed, refocusing certain ways in which the company has been doing business that may affect, in fact, the change of culture in the country. The report shows that SACOL has achieved 83% of the set KPIs, an increase of 10% from the previous year, which was 73%. It has positive outlook to reflect, but it also has a number of challenges to highlight in its progress towards growing the business and contributing to the country's economy. May I request, Madam Chair, your permission to hand over to the CEO, Mrs. Nomkita Mona, to start with the support presentation as the powerful presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson of the Board, and good morning, members of the House. And we are pleased, as the Chair has mentioned, to be reporting the progress report on SACOL for the year 2014-2015. The way we would like to do it, Madam Chair, is how we traditionally do it, that I take part of the presentation, more from the strategic element, and then I hand over to the CFO, who will take us through the financial performance, and then we'll head over to Mr. Pakudi, who will then take us through the transformation and the human capital issues. But after that, we will all take the questions. Thank you, Madam. What we wanted to show with this slide is that SAFCOL is still 100% owned by government, and SAFCOL does have subsidiaries, the Comatilen subsidiary, which is the one that actually is a trading company. Comatilen also has 80% shareholding in the Ifloma company in Mozambique, a percentage or a shareholder that we share with the Mozambican government. We also have two other subsidiaries which are dormant, and then we have the four that we refer to as associates. This came about as SAFCOL was being privatized those many years ago, and then the parcels and the pockets of shares were kept in these companies on behalf of communities by SAFCOL. So we still are looking after those, but the government and the EPE has given us a mandate to hand those over to another institute of government so that they can be kept for the communities. With respect to the introduction, this slide was to talk to the numbers, and the chair had already taken us through the slide, so we'll go over that. The chair of the board is also mentioned around the leadership of the company, and the people in this on the slide have also been introduced. If you look at SAFCOL again, we employ about 5,000 people. I would like to apologize on your slide. It doesn't have the five. It was editing. During the editing, the five came out, but it was pointed out to us, so we've now fixed the slide. So SAFCOL creates about 5,000 jobs in the rural areas. And what we believe is if you multiply 5,000 jobs by maybe four members, which is quite conservative, because we know that in South Africa the number of family members is more than four. So we say that conservatively we support about 20,000 individuals. These are all in the rural areas because of our business way it is based. So it's important to note the role played by SAFCOL being a state-owned company in those areas. We wanted to talk about the fact that we have a largely unencumbered balance sheet that SAFCOL does not debt, basically. That's what it means. And that we also have, if you look at us in relation to the other companies in the industry, we have a very high yielding asset in terms of our trees. So it is a very competitive advantage. We grow our trees over a 30-year period, and that also gives us added advantage to some of our competitors, even in the private sector. We are certified with FSC, which is the Forestry Sector Charter Council, and then they give certification to companies that run their businesses along humane, sustainability, financial, and all those elements they look at, and they give you a certification. SAFCOL has managed to maintain the certification over a long period of time. We are in the industry the first company that appointed a first female plantation manager in this country, and we have since appointed another one. The one is Kembingwana in the High Veld, and the other one is Londumiso in KZN. So they've been with us now, I think Kembi is more than 2 years, and the plantations are still standing. So we're showing the way in terms of how we are dealing with transformation. With respect to the next senior manager in the country, we are sitting at 57% at the 31st of March 2015, and 28% of those are deck senior female managers. And this cut across all the way to even forestry and foresters. It's not only the people in the boardroom. So even at that level, we make sure that we bring in female foresters and senior female foresters. SAFCOL pays rental of the first year was about 46.1 million. The next year was about 47.9. So we say roughly that you pay a rental of about 48 million. This rental is paid to DEF, and DEF keeps it in a trust for communities. We were behind with the rental up to and including the year 2014. We've since paid all that rental. We now are due to pay this year's rental, so we are not behind anymore. We only need to be paying this year's rental. But the rental amount is also under review. With DEF, we've had a discussion with DEF, and we are having a meeting again next Monday to talk about that review, because if it becomes too high, it's going to cripple some consumers, but then we need to make sure that we pay for the land that we use. We do have operations in Mpumalanga, Mozambique, as well as KZN. We are spread over the three provinces, but if you look at the land that's managed, it's 187,000 hectares, and of those 121,000 hectares are planted. We have 18 plantations. This is just only in South Africa, and we have consolidated them a few years ago, and we manage them as 15 business units. In Mozambique, we also, I did manage to talk about the partnership with the government there. We have four plantations currently. They cover about just under 32,000 hectares, and we have an additional license to expand for about just under 20,000 hectares, closer to the Beira port. We still have issues with the land claims. The land claims continue to be a risk factor for the business of SACCO, but I think I must correct that statement by saying the land claims themselves are not necessarily an issue, but the fact that it's taking long to settle them is a potential problem. Because we do support the land claims, we do support that the land must be given back to the rightful owners, and that SACCO use the land as the favor of those people necessarily. But it's important to note that we have more than 50 claiming groups, the groups that are claiming on our land. Overall, we have more than 61% of our land which is under claim. We also have claims in all the three provinces where we operate, and we also understand that the land claimants themselves are not trained in the management of forests as a people in general, and that's something that we need to watch out for, we need to sort out. Also, the issues around the processes of how to settle the land claims is quite cumbersome, it is quite low, it is not an issue that SACCO can do anything about in terms of actively facilitating, yes, that's what we do, but in terms of actually doing the work, we are not able to do that, purely because it's not in under our jurisdiction. But also in the interim, yes, there have been some illegal occupation of land where communities have come in and built houses for that. So we have got a lot of mitigation steps in terms of those threats that we see, and we'll talk about that in the next few slides. We are on record as a company that we would want to highlight this as a risk facing the business, particularly the slow settlement or the unresolved claims. But also, we operate our business on the parcels that I've described as state forest land in terms of the National Forest Act. As we do this, also we lease this land, basically on the basis of letters of delegation and interim agreements with the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. So it's generally the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform that plays a pivotal role and a leading role as well in the management and resolution of the land claims themselves. And therefore, we as a company have this vision that we stated, that we want to be a preferred partner for these successful land claimants. That's what we would like to do. And we've taken steps, which Ms. Mpafudi will talk to when she talks about it, the SED, because that's what we're trying to make sure, that the partner, the claimants partner with us. Statistically, those that are within SACCO, we have a total number of 32 claims, and of those, 14 are in Limpopo, 17 in Mpumalanga, and one claim in KwaZulu-Natal. The status of the claims is that one of them, the one in Limpopo, has already been under research, 13 are under research in Mpumalanga, and then the ones that are gazetted where the negotiations are almost taking place are 13 in Limpopo, 4 in Mpumalanga and 1 in KwaZulu-Natal. So in terms of the settlements, we have 3 that we are piloting. They are waiting for sign-off, and because we've been talking to the claimants themselves about a proposed model, settlement model that is developed together with the other departments. So there's some discussion around that. The model basically that we have developed on our own, and then we gave it to the Department of Rural Development and the Land Claims Commission, talks about a leaseback option. There's 2 options, where we only lease the land, so we pay for the use of the land, and the other one is the strategic partnership model. So what we've done is we are busy holding workshops where we are saying to the partner, we would like to lease your land for a certain period, after which we can then maybe say after phase one, we can then come back and talk about the partnership model. This model has found some acceptance from some of the communities. We have held a number of workshops, particularly in the Bobo, with the Ravele, the Ratombo, the Kakuma, Magwada and Sanza and Butabelo and Zongozi communities. So those communities have seen the model. They've given input. They've come back to say, we don't like this clause. We can live with this clause. Go back and clean it up. So at least there's communication between us. But again, we want to state that we want to be the preferred partner of choice with the communities. The second option talks about being a strategic partner. This one is where the government will then transfer the rights to the land, to the payment. And then the government will then acquire a share in the trees, because remember, SAPCO owns the trees, we don't own the land. And conversely, the communities own the land, they don't own the trees. So there must be a separation of that if you're talking about the business plan. So then the claimant and SAPCO will then form like a partnership or a JV, where there would be the management of the trees, but then the land would not form part of the business. It would always make sure that you want to separate the land from the business so that the community can always benefit from the result, but at the same time participating in the business. Just coming back to SAPCO and what we do, we have two core operations. It's the forestry and the processing side. This slide is what we always show the committee around. We started from research and development and all the way to where we send the logs to the clients. So that's what we do in terms of the forestry side. We also have a nursery. We do the establishment and the planting. We look after the trees. We put a lot of value in them, and then we also harvest them. The important thing about this slide is that at every point in the life of a tree, SAPCO spends money. We are putting money, we are investing in this tree, we are either pruning it, we are either cleaning it. There's always money that you do over the lifetime of the tree. So it's not only just trees growing out of it. It's a very capital-intensive business, and it's a very expensive business. Now, on the other side, once you've harvested the logs, you can either sell them on roadside, or you can deliver them to the mill, whatever mill that is. We also have our own mill, but then the product starts in terms of sorting, debug them, you cut them, and then you either get amaplanga, which is lumber, and also you get chips, depending on what you want to do with the product. But now the new strategy of the board is about using the full tree that you take out, making sure that you waste no part of the tree, so you can then go into energy generation as well as also other things, including the chips. We own a sawmill in Limpopo called Timadola, and we are connected to two other sawmills in the Highveld, which is where we take some of our logs to be cut so that we can sell the product that comes out of it. The one in Limpopo is called Timadola, and we are in the process of upgrading that sawmill. We are in the beginning stages of that, and we would want to have a capacity of about 160,000 cubic meters intake so that you can cut a bit more and you are able to sell more. But we need to make sure that the PFMA and all the other legislation is adhered to. In Mozambique, we also have a sawmill, a smaller sawmill. It was refurbished and restarted in 2012, but then currently we stopped operations there, and the board has already given us the mandate to go and look at a turnaround plan and come with a proposal to the board that says, how are you going to operationalize that business? Because currently the Ifloma Mozambican business is a drain to the SAPCO fiscal, because we are running that business with cash from this other business. With respect to the four strategic pillars of the business, we were looking at four issues: horizontal integration, vertical integration, rural development, and areas of green energy. With respect to horizontal integration, we have taken a view that if you look at the current model of SAPCO, we sell 75% of our raw material. We sell it to outside markets. And then, when I say outside, I mean outside SAPCO, but within South Africa. And then, we profit only 25%. So we know that if you want to make money in this business, you have to be basically integrated all down the value chain. But I'm talking to the second part now. So what we've decided now is that the board is reviewing a strategy that says you can now go basically integrate. You can build more sawmills, you can upgrade the existing ones, etc. But that comes from the strategic intent statement that we received from the shareholder. With respect to horizontal integration, it's really about saying the 187,000 hectares that we have is simply not enough. How else can you get more land? So we are in discussions with DEF. The department has been helpful in talking to DEF in making sure that we can get access to some of their land, and it seems that DEF is waiting for us to make a presentation to them on that nature. The rural development area is a very important one for SACOL, because that's part of our dual money. We're supposed to make money, at the same time, we're supposed to be a catalyst for rural development and making sure that there's economic development that comes to the rural areas. And if you look at SACOL, it really is designed, it's the best vehicle to be able to do that. So there's a lot of programs that you will hear about later on from Papudi again around what we're doing and what we're planning to do in the rural areas. The last part is around how can we also contribute as a company to the country's vision of green energy. And biomass and the waste, if you want to call it that, from the forest is what can be used to make sure that we do either coal generation or electricity generation in our area. So we have two that we've planned. Those one is going to be in Limpopo, the one is going to be in Mpumalanga. But we should be able to report about those in the next round next year. This is pretty much strategic initiatives that we are beginning to look at and say you must upgrade Timbadola and you must expand it. But also, what about the log that you leave on the ground without selling them, because the current market has not absorbed all your logs. So we looked at a potential export logs, but as soon as we finished the study, the price of logs went so far down that if we were to do it, we would have done it a lot. So we had to stop and say, we are watching this. If the price comes up, we can, would be able to participate. I spoke very briefly about the Isloma, and we need to expand it. There is a study that was done, as well as our own expansion into Sabi, the supply route, the coal generation, and of course the green energy that we spoke about. Isloma in the last financial year was at what we call care and maintenance. Basically, where we were looking after it, making sure we were protecting it from fire, we were slashing what was on the ground, we were weeding, pruning and thinning, but making sure that you are just making sure that there's no fire risk. That was what we were doing last year. We didn't spend a lot of capital into the business in terms of doing new things. So the board has now said to us, we want to move away from this care and maintenance and operationalize the business, and therefore that's the point that we'll be doing in the next financial year. But also the board will be reviewing various options in the next 3 months, and then also to look at how can we expand the products, not only of Diploma in fact, but also of SACOL. I'd like to hand over now to the CEO to take us through the financial performance of the business.
Thank you, CEO. Chair, honorable members, colleagues, I'm going to take you through the financial aspect of performance of 2014-2015. Firstly, I thought it's appropriate that we discuss about the main asset of business in terms of what we've done. The committee members might remember that last year we did an exercise where we sat with the auditors, the department as well, where we looked at the value of our assets, because they did indicate that it was undervalued. Last year we basically saw a significant increase in the valuation of the asset from 2.9 billion to 3.6 billion, a 731 million increase. And that was mainly driven by where we basically set and reviewed the parameters that went into the valuation. We knew that because we had not done this process in a while, it was going to be a significant increase, and we would then start seeing a normalization evaluation in the years to come. As such, for 2015, the valuation increased from 3.6 billion to 2.8 billion. The next slide. The chairperson made reference to an increase in KPI performance from 33% to 83%. This view is basically giving you the various elements of the KPIs that we had contracted with the shareholder. In terms of financial and commercial KPIs, we achieved all KPIs except for the one KPI that is on equity. We missed that KPI, that target by 0.5%. In terms of operational and sustainable forest management, we missed two KPIs in the area of intake, volume intake, within Timadola and our custom card operations. And you remember, Timadola is the one facility that we want to upgrade to ensure that we've got more capacity going in. In the area of socio-economic transformation, we had a number of KPIs that we missed. And I think the key ones that we are focusing on going forward, particularly around the area of procurement and youth ownership, as well as people with disabilities. We've started doing an exercise of really understanding the businesses that people that we do business with are in these categories, and also starting to identify how to make sure that we actually increase our spend in these areas. Other elements that form part of the 2014-15 corporate plan, the commitments that we had to deliver to the shareholder. One was the settlement model that the CEO made reference to. We also looked at our cost structure, identifying that we need to do a redesign, and going into this year's strategy, we're starting to unpack the type of work that we need to do on the main cost drivers of the business. As also alluded to by the CEO, we are in the process of doing a Section 54 application for the Timadola upgrade. With the strategy implementation comes funding requirements. As an organization, we are in the stages of finalizing the work in putting together a funding strategy that will enable us to deliver on the strategic projects that we've put in place. We've also identified that with the key costs in the organization being employee costs and contractor costs, we've also identified the need to increase productivity. We engaged Productivity SA in the previous year to already start looking at initiatives of increasing productivity. We've also focused a lot within operations, both within forest as well as within the Timbadona sawmill. I'm not going to touch on the slow turnaround. The CEO has made reference to it. We've also had to deliver on certain projects that come through the timber frame structure and furniture manufacturing. We've completed feasibility study and are in the process of ensuring that we are developing the business and producing timber frame structure and related furniture. We are also in the pre-feasibility stages of our vertical integration, which is one of the strategic pillars that the CEO made reference to. And we are on track to actually complete the feasibility studies by 2017. This slide provides a journey from 2014 in terms of how we've performed on the financial KPI. In 2014, we've seen, I think, an improvement, particularly around the profitability KPIs. If you see the top two, the first two KPIs, in the prior year, we're sitting at 2% and increasing to 7%. The second one, we're sitting at -1% and moving to 1%. Yes, I think we're not where we would like to be, but it is a step in the right direction. If you look at the statement of financial performance, we've seen a revenue increase of around 4 million. The driver for revenue within the business is basically the volume that the organization sells. We have a sustainable volume of 1.4 million. And this number has come down ever since we experienced fires in 2008. And as an organization, we're looking at ways of how do we then grow the top line, be it increasing the processing capacity, as well as increasing the land that we can then grow more timber and log sales. So what we've done for 2015, we've focused on cost drivers. We've seen a decrease in costs from 2014 of 40 million, both sitting at the cost of sales and the operating expenses line. And as such, we moved from an operating loss of 38 million in 2014 to an operating profit of 2.7 million. We also received a dividend from one of the associates. I think the only associate that actually has continued to provide to issue dividends, and that is Jack Roberta. For 2015, we received 41.8 million, and that is sitting under the net investment revenue line. And it's always important to already then do the decision to say operationally this is how the organization has performed, and also this is the investment income that we received from the associates. As indicated earlier, in terms of the valuation of our trees, last year we saw the increase, the high valuation, because we were obviously then introducing the change in the parameters. So we saw a 731 million review. In the year under discussion for 2014-2015, we saw a 144 million increase in valuation. And as such, for 2014-2015, the group reported a net profit of 170 million. In the next slide, I would like to highlight the key drivers within the balance sheet, which is the asset base of the company, moving from 4.8 billion to 5 billion. And the main driver, as indicated, is our main asset, which is the biological asset. We also saw an increase in cash flow from 232 million to 293. I must say that post March 2015, that number has come down because we have then since started paying the land lease rent house for 2 years. The next slide is an indication of the cash flow position of the entity. As of March 2015, as indicated, we have a cash flow position of 293 million. Now, I'd like to move to the next slide to talk to the audit report, the audit performance. The entity received an unqualified audit opinion with a number of significant findings. And these have been categorized into asset management, procurement and contract management, and in the next slide, audit of predetermined objectives. On the asset management, the entity at the end of the March 2015 needed to make sure that the asset register is updated on the ERP system. In August last year, in August 2014, we upgraded our system. So basically we went live, and now we need to make sure then that the asset register is also incorporated as part of the ERP system. I think the major findings were in the area of procurement. In the next slide, I would basically like to talk to the disclosure on fruitless and wasteful expenditure, as well as irregular expenditure. With regard to fruitless and wasteful expenditure, it decreased from 2014. In 2014, we disclosed fruitless and wasteful expenditure of 16.3 million, and for the 2015 year, that came down to 306,000. With regards to irregular expenditure, the breakdown has been provided in the next slide. irregular expenditure increased from 17.8 million to 90 million. As at the 31st of March 2015, the irregular expenditure was condoned by the board. The breakdown of the irregular expenditure has been provided in a detail below on the same slide. 22 million relates to the current year and is mainly driven by instances where the organization did not have tax clearance certificates for suppliers. The bulk of the irregular expenditure related to contracts dating back to 2006. Now, when we audit and we disclose if it is a contract that is renewed in the current year that relates to prior years, you would then disclose it in the current year. So we disclose the current year, but also we then provide a breakdown of all the years dating back to the 9 years ago. And one of the things that we've done following that exercise is a need to restructure, review procurement processes, policies, and the structure. Upon completing of the audit, we then engaged a service provider to do the exercise of doing that review. And they basically provided us a gap analysis, and we've looked at restructured and reviewed policies, which we intend on finalizing with the board within the next 3 months. Also, we've made strides in terms of currently post March 2015 in terms of the irregular expenditure that we see. We've since monitored up to 6 months, September 2015, where we're sitting at 68,000 rands of irregular expenditure, and that was related mainly to procurement of diesel where we did not have a tax clearance certificate. We also since engaged with National Treasury in terms of guidance on some of the small entities that we deal with who we then find challenges where they do not have tax clearance certificates, and they actually given us a ruling on the title of an actuary and ensuring then that we have accessed those small entities and being able to do business with them. We've also then identified that we needed to do an assurance process with regards to tenders within the organization. So before finalization of tenders, we actually audit them to ensure that all the steps are actually covered. And we are very much confident that with the steps that we are putting in place with the board, we are going to see a much better and improved position in the organization. I thank you. I'll now hand over to the senior executive for human capital.
Thank you. Good morning. On socio-economic and rural development projects, on slide 33, as we are starting, we completed more than 130 community projects, and we've spent over 40 million on this project in the last 4 years. We spend a minimum of about 10 million a year assisting communities close to our operations with a number of different infrastructure development projects, and those include building of classrooms or school, and other facilities like ICT center, early childhood development, and other projects as mentioned on the slide. On slide 34, we have signed a social compact with communities who are adjacent to our plantation. The purpose of signing a social compact is for us to have
a formal contract or formal working arrangement with the communities as far as understanding their needs and us being able to provide assistance to the communities. And most of the projects that we are providing there, or what is covered in the social compact itself, is the needs that they are having in the communities where they live. We meet with these communities on a quarterly basis, and most of the time the discussion with the communities will be around what needs do we have, what budget do we have, and what is that we can provide assistance, and also prioritize their needs, because with our budget we're not able to cover all their needs all the time. So we work with them closely, and we often agree to them saying this year we'll do a pool for them, and next year maybe we'll do a multiple center for them, and we take the discussion from there. And out of the benefits of the social compact, that for communities, we have seen that in the last 4 or 5 years that the schools will have more classrooms, so there are more education opportunities available for the communities. There are access to science and technology, business training, cultural and heritage facilities, as well as provide sports and recreational facilities. So multi-purpose centers often use it mostly for sports and culture. The benefit for SAFCOL is that we want to make sure that we've got good relations with the communities. Often the communities come in and assist us to protect the trees during fire, so they support us for firefighting, but also ultimately we recognize that they are going to be a partner of choice for SAFCOL. We want them to be a partner of choice at the time that we are settling for land, so we then start to have this relationship with them for that purpose. Enterprise development, we realize that over and above providing maybe infrastructure projects for the communities, there's a need to build sustainable and multi-million farmer-led business that communities can own, and those businesses should be within our value chain, because there is a lot of opportunities available within SAFCOL operation value chain for us to assist the communities to such a number of businesses. So to date, or at this period that we are reporting on, there is a number of businesses that we have started. Most of the businesses are owned by the communities, either by just a small business or a cooperative, or just them coming together and then just working on this project. And the projects that we have implemented so far, as you can see, is the charcoal manufacturing. We have we are also having essential oils manufacturing, desk manufacturing, agroforestry, civic culture and harvesting contracts that we are providing to the communities, timber frame construction, as well as sports, as well as transport and logistics. Our strategy is that in the next 5 years, as mentioned earlier, that this business grow and become bigger and sustainable, and that our communities are able to have businesses that they can own, but like I said, that are viable and sustainable. On page 37, we just want to highlight the one of the projects that we have implemented that is already in place, which is the furniture manufacturing project. The intention of this project was to also to drive rural development through creation of sustainable jobs. What we have done is that we trained 40 unemployed youth who are not working in Limpopo and KZN on furniture manufacturing, and we then established a factory, a very small factory in Timbadola Sawmill in Limpopo, where we invested 2 million in infrastructure, and we then ensured that the 20 youth who are based in Limpopo manufacture the furniture. Most of the furniture that we have manufactured in that in the factory are desks as well as furniture for school. Today we had more than 1,000 desks that we have manufactured and dispatched to school. Because it was a pilot project at the beginning, we donated the desk and the furniture to schools for free. And we also had worked with the Department of Education closely to ensure that we comply in terms of the requirements standard in manufacturing the desk. Moving forward, the intention is to
build the same factories in all the provinces, KZN, Limpopo and Mpumalanga. We want to make sure that this business is not owned by Safcol, but it's owned by the young people that we have identified. So we form them into cooperatives. We support them on business skills as well as on material, and then we ensure that they get business from particularly the Department of Education. We have for a number of years focused on improving skills and development, particularly for the youth. We recognize the importance of providing education and training for the young people in our communities. And the number of programs that we have provided include bursaries, internship, learnerships. We also go to schools and provide career expos and artisan training for the young people. In the financial year 2014-15, we have spent about 20 million on skills development training only. We have a very good relationship with the CETA, and 13 million of that money was received from the CETA. We have on 39, we are also ensuring that we provide bursaries for the young people, a majority, but also our own employees. 120 bursaries were provided to youth studying at various universities in the last 3 years. The bursaries, 60% of the bursaries are awarded to community members, and like I said, mostly the young people are just finishing school, but not yet working for Safcol, parents not working for Safcol. The bursaries, most of them are in engineering and forestry-related qualification. As mentioned in the slide, mechanical engineering, civil engineering, architecture. We are also recently looking at the skill set, new skill sets that Safcol will be requiring in future. As a company, the funding, we then are saying that the next 5 years we may just need the skills that we don't have. And we're starting to go to the universities and recruiting the second and the third year students so that they start training them for ourselves so that they are ready when we're also ready for the expansion in the company. Our bursaries are very comprehensive. We recognize that majority of the young people are coming from the poor families, so we ensure that we provide a comprehensive bursary program. So we take almost for all their needs, including accommodation and meals, and most of the bursaries actually don't pay for accommodation and meals. For the last 3 years, from 2013 to 2015, we spent 5.8 million on bursaries. We have provided the amount a number of years because it takes that number of periods for one student to complete a qualification. We also recognize the need for citizen training in our country and the scarcity of these skills. So we have at this stage, we had in 2014-15, we had the 7 artisans that we were training in Safcol for a different variety of skills like diesel, mechanics, electrical, engineering, and better making. And we've spent for the last 4 years about 3.8 million on this skills development. Part of that amount as well comes from the CETA. They are very strong in supporting us with funding for artisan training. On slide 41, we're talking about 54 students who we have trained, who graduated. So it's actually just a systematic, because we take them to university. When they complete the university, we take them on a full year for an internship, and of course they work and they learn the job, and immediately from that we then appoint them as field foresters. So we have allocated jobs for them if they are in the forestry area, and from that if they are fully trained, they start being absorbed into full-time position as they apply for the positions that are available. In the next slide, slide 44, we internally, there is a number of projects that we have put in place to ensure that we develop. Did I miss? Yes. Okay. Just slide 42, we're talking about the internship program. A total of 130 youth enrolled and successfully completed NQF-aligned learnership programs over the last 2 years. Most of our learnership programs are again in processing, general forestry, harvesting, silviculture, sensor manufacturing, and artisan training. In the financial year 2014-15, we have spent 1.7 million on training of learners. Slide 43, we are talking about the initiatives that we're putting in place to transform SAFCOL in line with CCPE Act and other legislation that are there for transformation. But in particular with a BE code, we have, for the last 3 or 4 years, we have retained our level 2 BE status, and we have seen that we have improved on that point year on year. So in the last 3 years, we have seen significant increase on our targets on employment equity, social economic development, enterprise development and procurement. On social economic development, we always get full points together with bonus points because of the projects that we're doing with the communities. We also are making sure that we increase the number of black females that are working in the company. I'm going to move then to slide 44. On slide 44, I'm going to mention the project that we're doing internally for mainly our own employees that we've appointed in SAFCOL. Most of these programs we are doing to make sure that we improve productivity for the company. We make sure that we achieve our social compact that we have signed with a shareholder, but make sure that people are ready and able to do the jobs that they are employed to do. So we have put in place a leadership development program for almost all our managers. There have been two programs that took place with their kids. They were middle managers as well as all the executives, just to make sure that they are ready for leadership positions. But in doing that, we don't just only provide training. We ensure that we firstly make sure that they are assessed before for training, and we also provide coaching for them. So in certain instances, that we have one-on-one individual interventions. We also have put in place other interventions, including succession and talent management programs. On page 45, we have on year ensured that we improve our performance management system. We recognize that performance management system is key in also ensuring that the company objectives are realized. And we have worked very, very closely with our line manager sometimes after with difficulty because performance management system can be viewed negatively, but we have to ensure that we hold each and every manager hand and ensure that they understand the performance management system. And we have seen a difference in the last few years where we can see that they are now starting to implement the system correctly. We have also implemented employee wellness program. I think that 2014 was the first year where we implemented the employee assisted program for the first time in the company. We have partnered with OXA as well as AXA8. AXA8 has been such a blessing to have called because they are providing, we had done HIV assessment for all employees and our prevalence of sitting at about 25%, which was very high. We're starting to see that our employees were absent and very sick. And just at that time, AXA8 came into the picture. They are providing the services for free because they're getting full funding from overseas companies. So they are now assisting us to provide a very comprehensive HIV/AIDS intervention to our staff. They test, they provide medicine and all the needs. And we have seen the improvement with our employees, particularly with attendance. We also have built two state-of-art clinics
We never had things in our own plantations. So we've got a clinic in Timbadola that is fully servicing our own employees, another clinic at in Spitkop in Mpumalanga. But also for those plantations that don't have clinics, we have mobile clinics available in all our plantations. So at least twice a week, our employees have access to some form of health services. We have been implementing the Employment Equity in a company in terms of the Employment Equity Act, and constantly keep and make sure that we have our signed Employment Equity Plan. We just concluded the last 5 years and just immediately drafted the next 2015-2020 Employment Equity for the company. The aim is obviously to ensure that we comply with the legislation, also increase the number of black people, particularly in management positions. The last slide is that for productivity, we had realized that we had a number of issues with productivity, and what we did is that we started a policy and then put in place policies to improve on productivity. So we put incentive scheme policies for a number of different workers that we have, because the nature of our work is different, so they need different incentive policies that we have done. And we've seen that with putting the incentive policy in place, productivity has increased in the company. We have again improved our old policies, so we had about more than 20 policies that we have developed and improved in line with the legislation. And we consistently work to improve the relationship with the union and the company. So we are meeting with the union on monthly basis, plant level, quarterly, in the bargaining council to discuss the employee relations. Thank you very much, ma'am.
Thank you. Madam Chair, before I hand over to our chair, I'd like to close off by saying that what we are bringing to you as a committee, we are bringing a company in transformation. We bring a company that's been improving steadily over a number of years. Those members who were here when we started at least 3 years ago will recall how our results were, the reports were really not good. And also we want to say that this is a company in transition, and that we have gone over the worst as SACCO, but not where we wish to be, both from the management and this board in particular has shown a very high level of intolerance around issues of slow pace of doing things and wanting to make sure that we push. But we believe that as the ex-co, this board has come at the right time for that call, because we are at, if you look at the sigma curve, if you're looking at tracking where organizations are, we are at that top where we depending on what we do, we can either go into two directions. Either you go down or you go up. And we believe that this board, with the energy that it brought and the focus that it has brought, it's really going to be good for SACCO. Mr. Pafundi also spoke about youth and training, and someone else might be looking at our numbers and saying, but your numbers are low. The board has already said that to us. If you consider that in South Africa, you have 14 million youth who are neither in training, they're neither in school, they're not at work. So that is a big issue, and the board has already said to us, we know that you have your plans according to the shareholder context, but you need to come to us with a much bolder plan on how SACCO is going to play in that space. So we were quite encouraged being here, Madam Chair, because if you look in the past 3 years, the areas of improvement are bigger than those where we haven't quite improved. In fact, even the area of irregular expenditure has improved if you look at what happened year on year between 14 and 15. However, it looks as bad as it does now because we had to bring in everything that had happened from 2006, 7, 8, 9, and 10. And the tragedy with reporting on irregular expenditure is that you report it every year it was found. So when it happened 10 years ago, it doesn't matter. You have to report it as that. So that's the what distorts our picture. But in terms of performance, I do want to submit to this committee that we're bringing in a good company. And Chair, I'd like to hand over to you. Thank you very much.
Through you, Madam Chair. Thank you. Thank you, Executive. Madam Chair, that is the face of SACCO, or the basis of the integrated report for 2014-2015. As CEO has indicated, we have a responsibility to make the company do what it is meant to do and bring price to government, making sure that it's not only responsible to provide issues to deal with issues of social responsibility, but it grows revenue, it adds in areas, because forestry has a lot of opportunities. If we look at the Middle East, all what the Middle East uses as its the foundation of its economy is actually what forestry has, but ours is renewable. And this is where we would like to take this company and make sure that that happens, and South Africa is in a position to create a lot of jobs, industrialized forestry, to an extent that every child in rural areas as well as in the urban areas should look forward to participating somehow in what is the should be the new focus for forestry industry. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, the executive and the board. That's the story of SAFCOL, honorable members. We will now have the opportunity to interact with both the reports, the financial and also the annual reports, 14-15. We will start with honorable Luyenge at the far end, and honorable Rancho will follow. Honorable Teddy will also, and honorable Panda will be the last one.
Thank you, that person. Maybe let me first appreciate the board, the specific input by the chairperson, the executive, and the various units within the organization. Maybe to attest to the fact that there is seemingly a growth in the organization, of which we must appreciate and give credit where it is due. My question, I would want to get an understanding as it pertains to the rent that the organization is paying to the communities. Do they have an obligation to ensure that such monies add value to the plight of such people? Or do you just make the transfers and then you don't know whether the utilization is actually responding to the cause? Secondly, the Mozambique site sustainability. Is it cost effective for that site to be actually part of your priorities in relation to making your growth more visible and viable? Then, is it feasible, taking to what the service in the research said, in relation to industrialization of forestry? We were in a country where the majority of the people are from the rural areas, underprivileged and poor. I might make use of the Eastern Cape. But unfortunately, when you look around here, there is nothing about the Eastern Cape. And then you tend to maybe think that when priorities are given for such new initiatives, because a forestry might not be new, but it is not known. I don't know whether you are lacking in terms of marketing your functions, because we really don't understand fully as to whether this organization's staff call is an entity like ESCOM and anyone else. So you need to do more, because we do understand the importance. But to be known can actually grow. You would need to maybe expand to the rural areas. People don't want to use their agricultural land and their lands all over the place. People are not working, young people are just doing nothing. How do you then suggest an innovation that will change that kind of situation through forestry, which I believe it will really work? So, lastly, it's around the staff establishment. And how big is your establishment, man? And also, do you have, as you train, you train, do you have a retention strategy then? Because you must be training and training for other organizations. Other organizations will vote into yours if you don't make greener pastures exist where they are. I'm very happy with the employer relations that you are promoting. It's good when you try and avoid that, because it is not always good for these fights all over the place. You know, there is a period where the employers will fight with the employees, and you tend to check as to where these people not aware that there will be that time where a decision had to be made about this particular issue. Why this fight now at this particular moment? So I think the way you do it actually, it's actually a method that must be applied across the board. You preempt and then you are proactive in doing your things. You make your employees happy, you know, by introducing these wellness programs, including sports. Let them play, and then they less stress.
Thank you, sir.
Thank
I just want to appreciate the presentation from Capcom and also the spirit that the CEO and the chairperson have displayed. CEO, in the last closing remark, he has a beautiful closing statement. I think she's good in defense. And I like her womanly spirit of telling us that the intention and the focus is transforming the company. It's not easy to transform the company. An old company that has been operating in a certain direction, when you have to transform it, it takes a lot of time, and there are many hiccups in between, many loss of money in between, and loss of human resource in between. But I'm glad that she has that womanly spirit of transforming, because we are the only people that got that transforming spirit. I just wanted to add on what Honorable Luyenge said, the last comment or a comment before the last one, when he was asking how many of these people that you have already within the system, within your system that you have already trained, how many of them are still in the company, still working for you? Because in your retention strategy, if you have one, the type of retention strategy that you have, can you explain them? How do you retain them? Because really, a lot of people, they get trained in such in an area, and not. I was trained as a teacher, but I was told that in the first 3 years, I must bring back the bursary money. So I must work for Department of Education for 3 years, 3 or 5 years, and then I can think of going somewhere after that. But what is your retention strategy on that? That I wanted to add. You also told us about the youth that you have enrolled successfully in the MQF Aligned Learnership that you have for 3 years, over the last 3 years. I just wanted to check with you, have you employed these youth? Where have you placed them? with the skills that they have already, the skills that they have. And the other artisans, the artisan skills that you enrolled the other 37 artisans that you spoke about. I just wanted to check with you, what is your relationship with ESCOM when you train those? Because when I look at some of the artisans that you have trained, I think there would be a need for ESCOM to get into your yard and just pick maybe some of the boiler makers, the electrical engineers, and everybody else. And I just wanted to know what the relationship that you have with ESCOM. So you recruit them and you train them and you keep them in your company. And also the students that you spoke about that you identified during the second and the third year in the university. When you identify people and you want them to, you channel them to a certain skill, they would feel like they would see a potential of being employed after. Do you employ them? Do you have enough assets in absorbing them in your company, or you are going to disappoint them saying, "I, but the streamer, we thought we will have a budget for you, but we don't. We will be looking around in these coming 2 years for you where we can place you." Meanwhile, they have been trained by you and they had all those aspirations. The 20 million rands that you spoke about of developing skills, does this add to 40 million of the 40 million that you spoke about of project, that adds on them, or this is a separate, is this 20 million that comes from the 40 million you spoke about, or it's a separate 20 million that adds up to 60 million when it's the 20 million and the 40 million check? I am also, I just wanted to suggest something in saying the programs that you have in development, enterprise development, also the relationship with Transnet. If you have you seen the school of or which children were sitting under a tree and they were writing on their lap because the school desk has been taken by somebody who where is repeated. I just wanted to check if the other provinces, do you have the potential in growing the very same business for other provinces and transporting for now, transporting maybe from Limpopo, you said it's in Limpopo, transporting by rail as Funido on our road. We don't want to have a loop on our by rail because we've got an entity under the Department of Enterprise that is transit. That is transporting goods. Can you just explain what is the relationship with and your the intended expansion of the business, and also the identification of you? Do you identify them yourself, or do you speak to the Department of Labor and maybe the Higher Education Department to identify you? If you identify them yourself, I will have another follow-up question. The socio-economic and rural development programs that you say you've got 11 timber frame structures, and you are saying you are operating at Limpopo, KZN, and Mpumalanga, but these projects are just a summary of projects that you have. They not identify how many are in Mpumalanga, how many in the 15 Elder Development Center, how many are in Mpumalanga, how many are in KZN, and all of that. So, I think that is for now. Those are the few questions that I had. I will check if I haven't seen anything else. Can check.
If you did, then we'll come back to you. Honorable Telly.
I think I'm partly covered by my colleagues with regard to some of the issues that I wanted to raise. But let me start by indicating that indeed we are happy to be associated with SACCO, given that we are doing. I'm happy with the fact that you managed to achieve your target by far in terms of in quite a number of the targets that you had wanted to achieve in terms of the shareholder compact, and also mentioned the fact that you managed to achieve the unqualified opinion. As of course, as politicians, we become happy when you see the kind of work that you are doing, like the trade in terms of your, from your social responsibility point of view. From where I'm sitting, I'm not convinced we are communicating enough about this kind of work that you are doing. It's one area that we might want to raise, that we need to find a way to try and improve in that regard. Secondly, is the issue of the social compact that you have signed with communities. How flexible are they? I'm raising this thing because there will be instances where, in my view, there will be communities where urgent interventions need to be made. I know of a constituent where I come from, in Yale, where there is one school where one contractor, for some reason, abandoned the project. The school does not have toilets, people are sharing toilets in the secondary school. About 500 people are sharing about 2 or 3 toilets or so. The situation is very difficult. So I'm just raising, trying to check how flexible are these contacts with communities in terms of where do you start, what is it that has been identified from following and the like. If it is flexible, to the extent that we can come and motivate and say, we think this case is far more severe than the one that we have already identified. I'm just trying to check in the regard. Secondly, is the issue of the land claims. You spoke about the illegal occupation of your land, of the land that you're supposed to be operating on. Mechanisms to deal with this particular challenge. To what extent are local municipalities involved in the process of you dealing with this, which to me is a very serious challenge? Are municipalities involved? What contribution are they making to make sure that they're able to resolve some of these challenges? Chair, I think let me pause for now. On a serious note, I think we are proud to be associated with SACCO and the Rotolo Committee, given the work that we are doing. Thank you.
Honourable Nobanda.
Thank you, Chair. Let me also appreciate the presentation. It was very clear and informative. That is why I didn't raise my hand. I covered most of the things. Anyway, I'd like to know if you have any strikes within your plantation. And if you don't, what is it that you have been doing to make sure you don't have much? And if you do, how do you go about resolving them? The other one was on KPIs, another video. And then work done by Safcon. I see most on your social economics. You do a lot of work in rural areas, although you don't know where exactly each problem, that kind of thing. But why don't we hear all this? Now for one, I've never heard anything on radio or TV, that kind of thing, about the work that you do. But you know that it's there and it's good work. The last one will be on time frame. What are your time frames in responding to the AG's family? Thank you.
Let me also have some few questions. On slide 36, the enterprise development, this number of beneficiaries, 30, 20, 20, 45, and 2000, are they individuals or individual companies or individual cooperatives? That's question number one.
I'll come to the second question because it's in relation to what is here. The I just want to find out if we have from the executive, because the board is new, that in line with the National Development Plan, do we have a master plan and staff course which will enable the entity to produce industrialists maybe in the next 10, 15 years to come? And your relationship with other departments, like Department of Education, in terms of desk production, the relationship with rural development, not only in terms of land gains issues, but they have a package of, I think it's outcome number 5 of rural development, sustainable livelihoods in rural areas. So if we have a link and a relationship with this department, it can really assist. Lastly, I want to check the... In the last meeting, we spoke about comparing the private sector and ourselves in the same space, and we spoke about diversification of the trees you plant, and we just want to know how far are we with that. Chairperson, over to you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, I think we must thank the members for the questions and comments, as well as the praises that I've sent, because they definitely encourage people to do more. Most of the questions will be answered by the executive, as the chair has indicated that the board is new. But I just want to deal with one specific question, or maybe two. One about the issue of the marketing. Why Safcol is privately not known. I think this is one of the points that as the board we have highlighted, and it's a matter that we are seriously considering, because there are two things that relate to that. One, Safcol being known generally, you know, within the country and internationally, and secondly, on marketing, the so-called marketing itself in the country, because the point that is raised about the intervention is that is linked to the whether the social compact is with the community is flexible or not. In fact, there are two points that come from there. One is the point about us as so-called assisting at the social level to intervene. But there's also another point about the strategy of SACOL going forward, especially when you mentioned the timber structure, that we are effectively looking at SACOL, making a contribution, like getting government assistance, as government has done with other state-owned companies, in increasing the revenue. SACOL is in a position, in fact, in a number of incidents, there's a school that was recently opened, the community that's meant to accommodate about 450 learners. That school was built in 2 weeks. Now, if you look at the challenges of the infrastructure, it means that if we also look at where else can SACOL intervene in increasing delivery, particularly of infrastructure, there are the number of areas where it can. The basic education, the schools that need to be built all over the place, the desks and covers that need to be provided. The clinics and even SASA in social development rent houses at times that are not even suitable for the people because they don't know where else to go. And with the timber structure, SASA is basically or will be in a position to build those structures that not only accommodate the institution alone, but would be a center for other government services. So I'm saying let's look at both. Yes. So it can be done. In fact, SACOR has started to show it with the infrastructure that has already been put in place. I think let me just give to the executive to respond to the questions, but I've made notes of all the questions. Let's make sure that we have our session. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Chair of the Portfolio Committee. I will take some of the questions that the member asked, and then my colleagues will come in the areas of operation, and then they will explain. The first question from Honorable Luyenge was around the rent house. What happens with the rent house is that SACOR pays to DEF. DEF was instructed by statute to open a trust.
What is the name of the trust?
Yeah, the trust is called Kabelo. Kabelo Trust, it was then opened. So we only pay directly to DEF for Kabelo, so that they then have the jurisdiction to distribute the money. Once we paid, we then have nothing, no obligation. We don't know how the money is distributed, and we don't know how the money is used. It is a challenge to us because community do not know that we pay. Because even as the money comes to them, they don't say, this is the one you got from SACOR. So it is a government issue that Gabriel is dealing with, but I'm told unofficially that there has been some money paid over to community in the past. But whether that has gone to way to the bond, we do not know. So it is a challenge for us, but we are complying with legislation. With respect to IFLOMA, what we have done is that we have a feasibility study that was completed. There was a business plan that shows that if you have enough capital, you can turn the business around. What we are then in the process of doing is going back to this new board with a tighter proposal as to if there's a big project that came out of the feasibility study, how do you eat an elephant? How can you then operationalize part of it such that you can start moving away from this business, costing us as much? So the question you're asking around the prioritization, is it viable? Is it best to keep it within? So those are the questions that this board will answer in the next 3 months, because the board has said by the end of December we must have a proposal on the table. So by the time we get back next year, there should be a clearer direction about this loan. The question that was asked around, or the comments made on communication and marketing, the Chair has adequately answered that. However, I want to just confirm that the board has taken this matter very seriously. The Chair had a performance management session with me, because now he's doing it after the fact. He wasn't here during the year. So as we were sitting and discussing this, one of the things he said was, I do not agree with the score you've given yourself on the communication stroke marketing part, so you do need to mark yourself down on that one. So that's how seriously the board is taking this matter. So the matter is now being handled. So already I've been knocked down, so the commission So in terms of that, but the other issue around the question on other provinces, the committee must remember, SACOR used to be a national organization. But then the cabinet took a decision to privatize. Some of the pockets were then privatized, and then because of that, we moved away from some provinces, Cape, Western Cape, Eastern Cape, and other provinces where they are for it. So by jurisdiction, we are no longer operating in the other provinces except for Limpopo, KZN, and Limpumalanga. However, we took a decision to say that SACOR being a state-owned company will assist in all provinces. That's the first thing. In fact, we've already had discussions with the people responsible in the Eastern Cape, because we're told there's about 100,000 hectares of land that can be brought back into forestry in the Eastern Cape. we did go in there, we had discussion with them, talking to ECDC as well, and we found that it's not 100,000 hectares in one area. It's small pockets in different areas, which make it rather difficult, but not impossible to do something about. So we are watching that area. It's something that we would look into. Now, coming to what else we're doing, we even gave 3 bursaries to the Western Cape because of the fact that we're saying we are a national organization. We're no longer just regional. So we've given 3 in the last financial year. So the bursaries that you see there, there will be 3 from the Western Cape in the Hlabo area where there's poverty issues, etc. And secondly, with respect to death, we've already given death to the Eastern Cape. But it happened in this financial year. So we're beginning now to say, let's help wherever we can help in all the other provinces. So you may find that we find areas where we can assist, and that's what we're doing. With respect to the flexibility of the context, I think Mrs. Mukafuti will respond to that, but I think the chair touched on it very briefly. We would be keen to see if there's anything we can do in that school. The pictures that the Honorable Teddy has just passed around are really tragic, you know, to be for a school. So staff calls need to see, not promising anything without having cost everything, but at least we'll send some of our people to go have a look and assess and see what would happen with respect to the JCF as well. So it's something that we could look into. The chair has asked a very critical question around the master plan on making sure that we link that to the NGP and the industrialization of the strategy. We were presenting to the board and we were talking about particularly the timber frame structures because that's a very great area of opportunity for us. Of course, there's transport, etc. But the board said, why are you thinking small? Why are you saying this one must be a small-scale project? So we said to the board, no, we have actually costed this. There's a 90 million project that we should be doing in some of the provinces with respect to timber frame. However, we said, for us, they start with the pilot. So the chair is quite right, but I think the chair of the committee is now expanding this to say, there's outcome number 5 for rural development. Don't try to do it on your own. So then that's what we would then be able to come back with and expand the issue and really have a master plan that talks to what the NGP says, et cetera, et cetera. But I'd like to confirm that as the strategy 3 weeks ago with this board, we then went to the NGP, went to the IPAC, went to all the legislation and the pieces of enabling legislation that talk to where we can link in. So we've linked in those areas that SAFCOL can get to. So there is that. The last one is around the diversification of products. The chair is correct. We did say last year that if you look at York, Sapi, Moji, and the others, they seem to be doing well if you compare them with SAFCOL. We then explained to the committee that it is because they are fully vertically integrated, which is what we are not. Because we plant, we look after the trees, and then we sell most of the trees. They don't do that. Wherever they plant and they cut the trees, and they create products. Some of them go all the way to distribution. They have their own distribution centers. Also, they're not only playing in this market. They go into other markets externally outside the country. And in fact, they also have manufacturing in their entities in those countries as well. So you can't really compare them directly. But what we are saying is the reason they are successful is because they have something we do not have. Now, as part of the strategy, the board has already given an in-principle agreement, which is coupled with the state as a shareholder intent statement that says, do the same thing. Go all the way and look at other new products. So that's what we're doing. So the diversification strategy, we should be able to report something to the committee within the next 6 months because we just started working on that. I do think that with respect to some of the other questions I have taken, and then I think my colleagues will come through with the details. Thank you. Thank you. I'm going to respond to the question on audit findings with regards to time frame. In any financial year, what we envisage to do is to ensure by the time that we get to the new financial year, we have actioned and closed and improved whatever gaps we have within the organization, such that we report, and in the previous September quarter, we have reported to the board on progress that we have made in closing those findings.
You'll also note that I think the key, so this is the key one around procurement, where God said you need to then need to come back with the wrapped up process that we've embarked on within the 3 months. So by January, there's a lot of work that needs to have already been closed before we start the audit at the end of March 2016. So the timelines, Honourable Member, are still within the next 3 months. We need to make sure that we close. Okay. Thank you.
I'm going to respond to a number of questions that have been asked on transformation. This is one on the staff establishment. We've got 1,700 employees in South Africa and about 500 in Mozambique. Retention strategy, I did allude to it very briefly to say that, especially for the people that were looking to a university for bursaries, because we are already in a scare and critical skills area. We cannot afford to lose our own learners after 4 years to other companies. So we take them as they are, all of them, into a learnership program. They stay for a learnership program for a year, and immediately after learnership, because you can't keep them there for long, because you have to open the space for others. We then created what we call entry positions that we called, if they are foresters, we call them field foresters, specifically just to house them there until they can be absorbed into senior position. And of course, they are absorbed depending on their capabilities, because there are some of them are starting immediately want to take them into the company. But all of them, I think, without a doubt, I can say we have taken them. So as we are in November, December, we are now preparing to get the new ones that are finishing this year. They will be coming in January. We have then made a setup for them, and they will be coming in and doing that on an annual basis. That is for forestry. For processing means that's where we take artisans. And also artisan is a scarce skill, especially a qualified artisan is very scarce in South Africa. So you cannot afford to not absorb your own artisan. Where we fail, we could be failing because somebody is offering them a lot of money and they do it. But we try as much as possible to keep our artisan in the company. And if you look at our staff establishment again, when you look at the payroll, you'll see that we also have a number of students that's in. Because it's difficult qualification, they don't finish, but we don't let them go. So we keep them until they qualify. Some of them, because by experience, even if they don't get a qualification, they're still good. So we keep them in the system. That's as they're giving them a different title from every qualified one, which then requires that we pay a bit more than a student that's in. Learnership it's all similar, and like I said, we take them for 3 years in our learnership because it's quite intense. So when we have production workers that we could have appointed as a diesel operator, and they have potential because they just ended up in that position because they didn't have money. You then take those and then you train them for 3 years to become whatever skill sets that you require, and then later absorb. So that's how we're working with them. To the question about a university student, we have always been going to university students for all these years, but particularly this year, our focus was mainly on the new skill set. We are expanding Timbadola, we want to build a new plant. We know that those skill sets don't exist at all in South Africa. We want to build a big timber manufacturing factory. We don't have architecture. In South Africa, we want to the market. There's nobody who can build or draw timber architecture, who can draw using timber. Most of them, they use the normal houses. So we then know that it's very scarce and it's not available. So then we then convince them, and with success, because they're excited to come to Capcom, we explain the company. So we then said, we are going to fund, and as soon as we fund, immediately after funding them by February next year, we want them in Safol. So even as they are in university, they must visit Safol during their holidays and complete their visit, and then we already will identify opportunities. And some of them that end up to go and train overseas, especially where we don't have skills that's available in South Africa to train them, particularly architecture and others, just to draw using timber instead of brick and mortar. To answer the question on the amount, 40 million is for socio-economic only. It's a budget the company has been giving us.
20 million is for skills development. And I break them down to say about 7.5 million were coming internal from our budget, and then 13 million were coming from specific grants that we are receiving in the company. How we identify youth for these opportunities, most of them we advertise internally in the company, in the media, as well as with the communities where we have social compact. So when the adverts out, we give it to the 10% of the JCF, then they distribute it in the community because we are trying to get as much as possible. But also we have gone into the schools around us, especially because we were very close to the schools. We know our high schools, so we go to them and make sure that we deliver the adverts that we're distributing. That's how we're doing it currently. And the question about flexibility, yes, I agree. The CEO has responded. I would really like to also have a bit of a discussion with the honourable member after this meeting, just to see how far we can assist and attract assistance in the school. But we're definitely flexible. And I'm here because it is within our communities, because if it was far, we'd have been able to negotiate other. That's manufacturing. In reality, I don't understand why in South Africa we will, in the next 2 or 3 years, will have children who don't have desks. So something is a raw material available. So they don't have to go and buy it. It's something that we can provide to start a desk manufacturing factory. It's very, very not expensive at all. So you can actually be able to plug in these desk manufacturing factories in all provinces. But we need the Department of Education to also come in, quite in, to assist us. And I had three engagements with them, including the MEC, you know. So we seem not to be working closely together, or especially with speed, to resolve this. But it's something that if we work together, we can then be able to close up much more quicker. On the question of strikes, the last strike that we had in Zafol was in 2012. And it was in the year that the CEO and myself joined. And I'm almost certain it's probably going to be the last time that we had in South Pole. Because when I joined in 2012, I realized that building the relationship is critical to making sure that you avoid certain events. So it was a strike about wage. It was a strike about the breakdown in the relationship that was there. They were not having anything. And we then immediately make sure that we start building the relationship. It's difficult. And the negotiation can be very hard. And the demand can be extreme, especially during a wage negotiation. However, you also ensure that you, with the relationship, you get very close to the discussion. So we have never had the strike since then. On the question asked by the chair on the number of beneficiaries, slide 36, the beneficiaries within there are the people, like the owners together with the workers. So for example, we have two companies currently want to increase on the transport that are being owned, that are for trucks, so they will be the owners, but then the owners will then have their own workers, so we have added that number. Also looking at the 2000 civic culture contracts, it's people who are planting trees. So it is the people actually doing planting together with the owners of the business. On the question of communication, we have done a lot of work. It's not enough. Most of our projects are opened by the Deputy Minister. He's very supportive in going with us and opening. And because it's available as a Deputy Minister, we always invite media, particularly SABC and the local media. And they always cover our stories, mostly in the radio and local. So if we have a lot of articles that we can collect at that show, that we can do much more, like it was explained earlier. I think that I've covered. On the question of black industrialists, the slide 36 is the beginning of what we want to do. And if Chair had recalled what I said, we said we really want to build multi-million sustainable black-owned companies, and it has to happen. And there are opportunities within our value chain to be able to do that. So what we have done at the moment is that we have put policies in place and the strategies that we'll be going to board, just to say this is what we want to do. The biggest challenge is always about funding. and also we require working together between different government departments and government financial agencies for us to realize this process. Because in forests in particular, you need equipment, and equipment is expensive. For example, if you want to have a company doing harvesting, they will have to buy the equipment. The equipment are in millions. But if you can get them organized and you can be able to get a DTI or any other funder to fund them, we can certainly say that within our value chain, because it's what we do every day, we can assist in providing the business to them. So that is what we are working on, and we will be able to provide progress to this committee next year on making sure that we implement this option. Thank you. Still want to add?
Yes, thank you, Chair. There's a question we didn't answer. I think there are two questions we didn't answer. One I will answer, the other I will ask the COO to answer. The question is around involvement of local leadership at the localities when we have invasions by people coming in and illegally coming into our land. How is dealt with this matter in the past, and it seems to work, is that we have gone down to the leadership locally, whether it's the chief or the municipality, etc. And we also involve the chief land claims, the deputy land claims commissioner, and the rural development. So we go there as a multidisciplinary team, and that seems to have worked. So that's what we do, because you need the locals for that. The other issue was around the relationship with ESCOP. I think it was Honorable Ranto who asked that, also around rail in terms of Transnet. So the rail one, I'd like the COO to talk to us about what have we done to talk to Transnet around rail, both for the business as well as how to sell our products. But the issue around ESCOM is, firstly, we want to retain our own assistance, so we don't want them to come and get them. I think Mrs. Kofuji has said. But what has happened with the ESCOMs and the partners and all the others now stable, under the auspices of the Deputy Minister, he has led a forum called the Enterprise Development Forum, where we all our leaders in enterprise development meet and they share learnings, and then they see how they can collaborate, etc. So that seems to be working, and Mrs. Kofuji participates in that. It's been going on for, I think, since the last year already. So there's that element that we hope together. On the rail, I think it's an important strategic question going forward about how to use our roads and what happens on rail, etc. So I'd like the to also respond. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Internationally, most logs and lumber gets transported by rail. Even in the world, all the way through from North America to China, you see a lot of products, especially logs, on rail. In South Africa, I think we see hardly anything. The biggest area, I think, would be Sappi in Mpumalanga. It's got a huge pulp mill closing in Osprey. And the way the volume, the sheer volume, I think makes sense for us. I can't speak on their behalf. But in our business, I do believe that the geographical spread might have caused things to pull out of transporting logs. Areas where we see future development in this regard would be typically where, if we can export logs again, when international prices get back to the levels where they should be, we've identified that we'll transport logs by rail to a place like Richards Bay. That's the best way to do it to a central point. Today we can't afford to export logs, so the international price and the market has just gone down too far. So that's in the pipeline. Whenever the market is better, we'll certainly consider it. We've already had lots of interaction with content on that in that regard. The other one, we are considering as one of our projects to put up a merchandising yard, a central merchandising yard. And what it means is that you bring the tree products to a central point and distribute by road from there. It has all sorts of advantages, and we would consider that. Unfortunately, the rail link that we would be relying upon would be the one that we saw, which Johnson closed down 3 years. It's not to use anymore, so we could consider it, but I think a lot of water needs to flow into the ocean before that might happen.
Here we are. Thank you very much for the explanation. But that's one thing for interest sake. This essential oil manufacturing, is it from the plants you have? Yes. To give a word of advice, also the Department of Science and Technology, they have what they call R&D funds. They can also assist to expand this project. I think it will be unfair if maybe we close the meeting without allowing members of the board, the new board, just 1 second to make their maiden speech. Oh, you want to say something?
Yes, I wanted to have, as only 2 concerns that I have, especially on what you have just raised on the essential point. I was also going to say, now to ask about it, but now that the sub call has responded to it, I just wanted to say, when you say they will be their market that they have identified is overseas, and they will be exporting to overseas. And then what is your role as SAPCOL in helping them, seeing that market goes through? Because if you say they, it's as if you are no more part of it, but you are the one that have got elected, have developed this enterprise. So I think you don't need to put them aside. You must go with them through and see if it happens. With the weight loss purposes, I also wanted to suggest, if it is possible, now that there is no market, you said the market is down, is there no scientific research in South Africa that can be done for those laws to maybe to get something else out of it? Because I think if it's a waste, the waste today, a waste, it becomes something very productive. If there is any research that we have done in those waste that might help us going forward and might help the growth of the company. Do you have any preventative measures that are in place on vitality? Because I think in the research document that we have, there is a fatality that has happened in SAPCOL. Do you have any preventative measures that are in place? And the issue of your land, when the invasion of land that we spoke about, if the land is not identified and prevented with whatever, because in my mind, of course, the company between Maria and Yuki to be land with those many trees in, but no one can get in that land just anyhow. Because that land has been covered and it's all open to everybody to do whatever they want to do. Thank you, sir. That will be all for today.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In fact, I thought there are three areas in the previous range of questions that has not been fully responded to. In fact, one has not been responded to at all by Honorable Leander regarding if industrialization of forestry is feasible. So I thought it's important, that's a very important question that needs to be responded to. If one does research, there's 450 products that can be produced out of forestry. And companies all over the world are using forestry for a lot of other things. In South Africa, particularly with SAPCOL, the target has been, as the CEO has indicated, the target has been very limited. So, industrialization of forestry is feasible, not only in terms of the high-tech products. In fact, the high-tech products with the forestry include an extent of even making composites that are even stronger than steel. And these things are possible to make the advance. When you also look at the structures, building structures, when we talk generally of timber structure, there's even other technologies about using wood to build stronger structures. Currently in Europe and North America, they are planning to build skyscrapers because of how technology is advanced, including the what they call laminated, cross-laminated timber, which is said to be stronger than even steel. So these things are things that need to be known. And we believe that in fact the time is right for that industrialization to take place. A lot of downstream can come out of it. Not necessarily that Sapcor will be responsible for all of it, but Sapcor could be a catalyst in creating those downstream industries. Eucalyptus oil, for instance, is apparently very lucrative internationally, and we are not selling. We are spending a lot of money buying fine oil in the health shops. But we have the opportunity to do it. There's a lot that can come as part of the downstream. So the industrialization is feasible. And most of it, they not even require the kind of money people can think of, multi-million. CSIR, they have done a presentation to Sapcor, the Sapcor board, about some of the opportunities that are there that can be exploited. Some of them include making glue. Apparently, the glue that we're using in South Africa comes from crude oil. And we can manufacture glue out of the trees. And manufacturing of glue, apparently, the plant, there are still incredible plants that would cost roughly about R1 million, which could be operated at the back of a truck or a buggy. So there's a lot that we already know that can assist in the process of actually industrializing forestry when we talk about it. And of course, this is the industry that can best help with the development of the red area, focusing there, getting partnerships with other companies and research institutions that already have that have already done research, including DFC and CSIR.
Will that be part of the master plan we are proposing together with the CEO?
It has to,
and the sooner it's done, the better, so that you are able to go and oversight the initial stages of that.
And then the last point on Iploma. In fact, the best view on Iploma is that we are currently paying money on something that is called care and maintenance. And we could be, in fact, Iploma needs to be self-sustained. And one of the challenges that we identified with Iploma are the same challenges that Sapcor and South Africa also have of the strategies of marketing the business, as well as the product. So those are the issues that we are attending to make sure that Iploma is in a position to be operationalized and self-sufficient, both in terms of increasing the plantations that are there, as well as processing what is already there. Thank you, Manager.
Chairperson, can we give maybe the new members just a second? It would be unfair for them to fly all the way and then go back without saying anything. So you want to say something?
The Honourable Ranto had asked a number of questions, Chair, so we thought we'd, yeah, because the Chair took the residual question. The first thing I want to clarify is that we actually do not have waste logs, Honourable Ranto. We have residue, so we call it forest residue. So we try to see that there's value in, but it used to be called waste, you are right. So we are correcting that language. And that you are right, the scientific research that has already been done, we can use them for something else. But it was a question of saying which one is quicker. Can we get them out to get money or not? But you are on the right track about that. With respect to the check and the incidents that have happened, there are preventative measures. SAFCOL is almost like a scientific company. Everything we do is very scientific, it's very specific. And there are plans, a failing plan, there's training, you must conform, you must do it like this, you must stay so far away from the tree. But what we find happens is that people, as they get the hang of it, they then improvise and they take shortcuts. And in all the investigations that we've done, where there's been either an accident or even a fatality, it has been found that it's when people's habits, you know, they say, I can do this, so it's easier. So what needs to then happen is retraining both of the supervisors and go back to them to make sure that they follow. You don't have to die cutting a tree if you do it according to the letter. So there are preventative measures. They are all documented in the company. They follow specific legal, opportunities. So that's what happens. With the last question on the land invasion, all our land is demarcated. We know it starts here, it stops there. But what it happens is that because people are, now they can't wait any longer for the land claims process, they then become impatient and they want to, but the particular community that did that, you almost understand them, because they live in and that's no longer in English, they live in very difficult to reach areas. So for them, the forestry is in a better area, access to roads, etc. So that's basically what had happened there, but we have managed the issue. Thank you, Chair. Over to you, Chair.
Yeah, I'll maybe we'll start with your Tamduko and then go with that. Thank you.
Thank you, my Chair. Thank you, the Chair of the Portfolio Committee. And thank you for inviting all of us here. It was good to see all of you. At least we know who we were working with. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I also want to echo Dr. Mdubana's sentiments. We are happy to have met with you and see the faces. And I just want to say for me, and I want to also, I want to believe that also applies to our other board members. We take this duty as a patriotic duty, and we view it with a very high level of patriotism. This for us is for posterity, you know, for the future of South Africa, for the future of Africa, and for the future of the world, you know, looking after trees. So we really are excited and happy to have met with you, and we look forward to delivering as a board what you require. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to be the board of advocate. And pose a challenge to the portfolio committee. That we have good intentions for putting up timber structures and coming, but our communities are not used to skyscrapers made out of wood. It is fair that the portfolio committee take this challenge and educate our communities that timber can be used to build houses, can be used to build bridges, not only mortar. If you look at, he just said that the school was built in 2 weeks. And when you put timber structures, you are not using water to do the jaga and the trees and company. And those timber and wood structures are actually made without actually involving that amount of infrastructure sources. It is fair that our people start taking heat and that these structures are made much more cost effective and takes less time to build them. We need to really educate our communities that this is the way to go. The world out there, they have those buildings and structures built out of timber, and maybe we should actually get our people to start accepting that this is the way to go.
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Member. From my side, really, I just want to say thank you very much for the kind of questions that you've raised. You really raised very constructive questions and you've given an input, and that really has encouraged us as a board, as a team and team management to go back and improve in some of the areas, but even to where we do stuff, to start thinking of other ways of doing things. So your questions and your input has really encouraged us, that really for the support and need to do more and we can improve. Thank you.
Thank you, Jane, Honourable Members. The downside of being the last to speak is there's nothing else to say. From our side, I think just to say, I think this board is a very good team, and we really want to make a big difference in this company. And I think our actions will speak next year, or when we meet again, we'll be able to see that. And well, I hope so. Thank you.
Thank you very much. There's a saying in Setswana, and I think even in English, it says, new broom, yes, and we hope you won't be the new broom. You will always be new all the time. You will never get old, and we hope you'll be able to take SAFCOL to the highest level, provide strategic leadership to the executive and to the company itself, because you are one of the entities where our hopes are in terms of economic growth and job creation. And together with other SOEs, if we put our heads together, we can turn the tide around. Unemployment has been stubbornly refusing to go down. It's going up all the time. Well, of course, there are global factors involved. But we need to begin to think outside the box, to say under the circumstances, what do? We have been given an opportunity to serve the people of this country, and it is an honor for all of us, both yourselves and ourselves as politicians, to make a difference in our people's lives. So these heads which are here today, we are confident that you will be able to make that difference. With these few words, we thank you so much for these presentations, and also to hear the voices from the new board, and we have hopes that our interaction with yourselves will be meaningful to an ordinary person in the street. This is the last meeting of the year, of the quarter. Is it quarter? You normally put it in here. And we wish you well, and enjoy your Christmas with your families and the festive season. And we hope to see you back next year, still intact, with this energy which we see today, and the determination to can work for South Africa. Thank you so much, and fly safe back home. Honourable members, just allow them to leave so that we remain and finish the business of the day.